Because at the end of the day, a business does better when they embrace diversity, equity, inclusion. And so I go that route and say, yes, I hope you like it, that you think it makes the world better. I'm there too, but let's just at least agree that your business is going to be better, more sound, more innovative. You're going to retain people like a Brian who can bring themselves to the workplace and feel okay and feel psychologically safe. They're not going to leave. And when you have that retention, that knowledge retention, that historical experience that they bring to the table, your company's just going to do better.
In her book, Conversational Intelligence, Judith Glasser wrote, "To get to the next level of greatness depends on the quality of our culture, which depends on the quality of our relationships, which depends on the quality of our conversations. Everything happens through conversations." Welcome to Conversations, powered by Quantivos. Welcome to this edition of Conversations. I'm Brian Gorman, your host and a coach here at Quantivos. And our guest today is Steve Iacobelli. Welcome, Steve.
Hello, Brian. Good to talk with you again.
So I'm going to jump right into this, Steve. Your tagline is the Gay Leadership Dude. We actually met through our membership in the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. You have a book on the market now called Pride Leadership, which is really focusing on the characteristics of those who are of the LGBTP.
Now, even we get alphabet souped.
LGBTQ plus community, and you have a book coming out called Your Queer Career. So we're here really to focus not from a political perspective, but from a business perspective on the future of DEI. I'd really like to focus, Steve, on the importance of a DEI perspective to a business leader. Because for me, from where I sit, being inside an organization that accepts me, not me as they perceive me, not me as who they want me to be, but me as who I am, is going to get a much more rich and robust and engaged version of me showing up than an organization that doesn't accept everything that I bring to the workplace.
Yeah, and it's funny because in all of our programs, you know, even before all these things happen, our inclusive leadership programs, I always start with the story on, you know, why does a business, especially a business, go down this path? You know, and I say there's kind of a continuum. On one side of the continuum, it's we legally have to. You know, there's a rule in place, depending on where you sit in the world, where you have to be inclusive in some way, shape, or form. Now, to your point about affirmative action, from a college admissions, that's changed, although, you know, states like California have had it changed for forever and have been maneuvering it in the right way. So we can learn a lot down that path. But businesses, you know, they have to do certain things. It's just part of the legal landscape. So that's one side, you know, keeps us out of trouble, if you will. On the complete opposite end of that continuum is it makes the world better. It makes people like Brian feel good. It makes people like Steve feel good when I can bring my whole authentic selves to that workplace. And so, you know, it just makes the world a bit more positive. And so that's kind of on the other end. And I often go into these sessions, and I'll be honest, some people are voluntold to be in these programs. I know that, you know, they're there because somebody at a senior level said, you know, it's a really good idea if you go to Steve's inclusive leadership program. And so they're like, okay. So I know some people are in there who want to be more tourists than participative. And so I speak to those folks and say, look, you know, yes, it keeps you out of hot water as a business. Yes, I am in the camp that it just makes the world better. It makes people feel better. But in the middle is the business case. And if you want your business to be successful, you need to embrace some sort of diversity, equity, inclusion strategy. Now, not this performative thing that we're seeing way too much of over the past several years, where it's like, oh, we'll put out a statement and we'll rainbow wash our logo for the month of June and yay, we're inclusive. And then July 1st comes around and there's no healthcare benefits for our trans siblings, or there's no benefits for adoptions for same-sex couples, for example. And so, you know, and I'll bring up these statistics. And if you happen to be watching, if there's a video part, you don't read this. If you just go to Google and put, you know, the business case for diversity, equity, inclusion, you'll see a lot of good stuff. Now, there's some that's interesting because of the performative allyship, there are seeing some companies that I'm inclusive. And if you're not seeing me, I'm doing bunny ears, where it's not hitting their bottom line. But if you're doing it the right way, you're going to impact your business in a positive way. You know, I like what this one statistic, 85% of large global corporations believe diversity is a critical in fostering innovation. Yes. If you have homogeneous thinking, if you have the same folks who you're hiring from that same university or recruitment center or whatever that look the same, that tend to think the same, guess what, friends? Your innovation is not going to be super stellar. You need that diversity of thought. And obviously a more inclusive workplace gives that, fosters that. 33% of companies in the top quartile for racial and ethnic diversity are 35% more likely to have financial returns above their respective national industry medians. What does that mean? That if I have a more racially diverse company, you know, it's 35% more likely I'm going to do better just in that point alone. And you can go on and on and look at the statistics that awesome folks like Deloitte have done over the years and the Brookings Institute have done, because at the end of the day, a business does better when they embrace diversity, equity, inclusion. And so I go that route and say, yes, I hope you like it, that you think it makes the world better. I'm there too, but let's just at least agree that your business is going to be better, more sound, more innovative. You're going to retain people like a Brian who can bring themselves to the workplace and feel okay and feel psychologically safe. They're not going to leave. And when you have that retention, that knowledge retention, that historical experience that they bring to the table, your company's just going to do better.
Steve, you and I are best qualified to focus on the difference that being a member of the LGBTQ plus community brings. You highlight some of that in Pride Leadership, and you highlight it in part in terms of what you, what I, what our brothers and sisters in the community experience when we do live into ourselves. And you really call out characteristics that are of value to leaders, are of value to organizations when people can freely live into them. What are some of those characteristics?
So, and I love that we didn't plan this, but I, of course, always have a slide behind me, yay, doctorate in distance learning. So, and if you're not seeing this, Pride Leadership, strategies for the LGBTQ plus leader to be the king or queen of their jungle, came out in 2019, pun intended, but it's actually been about 30 years in the making. And as I said, I've been doing this for a while. And over the course of my experience, and I was internal to folks like Disney and IBM, and I was a professor for like a hot minute, and then I started doing my own gig in 2008. And over that time, you see a lot of leaders, and you start to kind of see what's working for the ones who are just doing great, and what some who are just struggling or failing, and what they aren't doing. And that's kind of what led me to the path of writing at the time was going to be a quote-unquote generic leadership book. And the first thing I did was really think about what are the key competencies that I see those successful leaders doing, whether they be queer or not. And so they really are the concepts of being authentic or authenticity, having courage, leveraging empathy, effective communication, building relationships, and shaping culture. So those are the six that I think, in my experience in this world, watching leaders for 30 years, these are the ones, the top ones, and there's of course others, but these are the top ones that I think make or break leadership success. But then as I was kind of getting that book together, I put it through the queer lens. And I like to say, you know, my little inner Carrie Bradshaw, if you are listening or watching and you remember the original Sex and the City, and Carrie would sit down in her MacBook and say, I couldn't help but wonder. I kind of started thinking that way. I couldn't help but wonder, is there something about these six competencies that as a queer person, you look at them a little bit differently? So we'll take authenticity, for example. You know, the Brené Browns of the world and all sorts of great gurus in leadership are saying, you know, if you're an authentic leader, you're more powerful, you're more effective. Of course you are. But now to put that through the rainbow lens, if I'm an out gay man, in the workplace. You know, I'm being my authentic self. If I'm a trans woman who's bringing her authentic self to the workplace, that's power. And I say in Pride Leadership, you can channel that power of authenticity to be a more effective leader, to build trust maybe a little bit faster than those who aren't as authentic. You know, same thing with empathy. I have said, you know, so I'm a white cisgendered gay dude, if you're not seeing the video. I'm so glad I am. And I discovered who I truly was early on, because that gave me that understanding that I will not, of course, understand what it's like to be a person of color or a woman living in this world. Of course not. But can I have a little bit better empathy ever having been gay bashed many times in my existence? Yes, I can. And so, you know, leveraging that empathetic lens just makes me a better leader on understanding any other out there, or at least having a bit more openness to hearing their experiences. And so in Pride Leadership, I say these are the six. And as a queer person, you're looking at these a little bit differently, and you're already exercising them in a beautiful, powerful way. Just channel that to be an even more effective leader.
One that I often reference in my work with leaders, and certainly with, again, leaders from our community, but also leaders from other underrepresented, underempowered, in many cases, communities, is courage. As a gay man, it took me 31 years. Now, quite candidly, when I first began to wonder, the mental health community would have told me that I had a psychological disorder for being gay, because I'm older than you. But even then, it took courage to come out, and it took risking friends, family, and career to be honest about who I am. And so knowing that I have that courage really empowers me in a leadership position to be more honest, to be more transparent, to be more willing to not be foolish, but to take well-calculated risk.
And I think too, and we talk about, you know, and all these are so gorgeously intertwined, these six competencies. You know, you can't talk about courageousness without effective communication or building relationships or really any of the other things that are out there. But, you know, I say that as, you know, white cisgender gay man, I'm constantly coming out. Now, using the title The Gay Leadership Dude takes a lot of the heavy lifting off of that these days. But, you know, I found that I'd be standing in front of a room full of 30 leaders for a big pharmaceutical company. And, you know, every single time I had to make that decision, that maybe courageous decision, do I let them know that, oh, I have a husband of 25 years or whatever that looks like? And so, you know, and we all in our community have that experience, you know, the coming out over and over and over again. Well, yeah, that's exercising that courageous behavior, but it's also effectively leveraging those, that communication muscle, especially those challenging conversations to have. And so, you know, I talk about it in Pride Leadership quite a bit, that if you think about it, and I'm a glass half full kind of guy, former Disney, oh boy, you know, kind of thing. But in all sincerity, if you are thinking about it, you're leveraging these tools and exercising them a lot when you're part of the rainbow family. And so how do you just, like you said, channel that courageousness to just use that maybe in a different way from a leadership perspective?
And if you have the courage to come out, you're also living more authentically. What do you see as the future of DEI in the business world?
Well, what I'm seeing is, and I love this image because this is what it's not. And if you're, again, if you're not watching the video, it's, you might have seen it that a couple of years ago, Lego put out this little Lego set of like little rainbow Lego folks. And it's so cute. And everyone was all gaga over it. It was great. So the image says July 30th, it's a little whole rainbow Lego folks. And everyone's like, you know, yay, this is awesome. But then July 1st is an image next to it where it's these little stormtroopers painting that rainbow gray again. And this performative allyship, which is what this is symbolizing, that's not the future. And you're seeing it way too much. And you're also seeing companies that have been, you know, like, we're going to be inclusive. We're going to have this trans influencer back our beer. We won't name names. But what happened? They tried to play both sides of the coin and say, yay, we're so inclusive. And then, you know, a segment of their demographic push back. And so they acquiesced to them. You saw that with a large retail chain doing the same thing. And so that kind of performative allyship will absolutely alienate all sides. And so what the future of diversity, equity, inclusion strategy, and I will call it a strategy as we talked about the business case, is being transparent with what you're doing, aligning it with the business, and maximizing that support and that strategy to meet a business end. Again, yes, it makes the world, of course, a better place. But if you're a business, if you're a workplace, what is the strategy that you're doing in order to be more inclusive? We know that the studies will back it, more innovation, blah, blah, blah. We talked about that. But how are you doing that? How are you embracing that strategy? And most importantly, how are you going to react? Because you will get pushback from someone. How are you going to react and stick to those guns and not fall back to that performative allyship? Like, okay, we'll give up. What you're starting to see as a backlash to some of the, both the legislation that's happening, the affirmative action, Supreme Court, and just some companies who really don't have their quote unquote heart in the support of diversity, equity, inclusion. What are they doing? They're cutting that function. There was a thing on National Public Radio recently where they looked at the number of diversity, equity, and inclusion, like directors or above jobs that were posted in 2020 versus now. It shrunk a lot. And why is that? Because those are the companies that really weren't putting the financial and other resources behind that true initiative. It was a tick box. Yay, we're performative allies, we're awesome. And now they're getting pushback. They're like, oh, let's cut costs, blah, blah, blah. So that's what the strategy is not. And what you're starting to see is those companies that are making those decisions, it's way too transparent now for us to see, oh, you just cut that big D&I that you just added 3 years ago. You didn't really mean it. Okay, let's focus on those folks who do mean it, who are giving their support to the queer community and all those other marginalized groups and sustaining that support even in the face of some challenges that they might be having out there within their own customer base.
As a leader, how do you build that environment, build that culture that says everyone is welcome here?
It's tough. And I think it has to start with the senior executive buy-in. And so the diversity, equity, and inclusion function is not buried somewhere deep in the HR world. It's somewhere sitting a lot of times in the chief operating officer's venue. That's the smart companies that are doing that. And those that are, and this is kind of the framework that I put in Pride Leadership as well as a bunch of my keynotes and all their fun stuff, is any leader within the business, if this is going to be an initiative that sticks, and of course we want it to, takes the opportunity to think in, speak up, and act out. So it's kind of a three-pronged strategy as a leader. So the thinking part is look internal, get your own house in order, know what unconscious biases you may have and you might possess. Kind of get into that zone of looking at your own leadership, looking at what you're saying, what you're doing, how you're speaking, both in and out of the workplace, and start to just really analyze yourself. You know, when you are in those spaces, do you use inclusive language or not? Do you try to be empathetic for any of those others? You know, just kind of really thinking and reflecting on your own level of leadership. So that's the think in. The speak up is looking immediately around you, to your team, to your department, and really analyzing, you know, are we creating that space for any others to come in? And with this one, I often talk about the concept of silent collusion. And Brian, I'm sure you know, and those listening you probably have seen, where someone says that disparaging remark and no one refutes it, just crickets. You know, true story in Atlanta, client site, and we're just about to start the meeting. It's myself and one of my top doggers, which is what I call my consultants, and 38 other folks, which were part of the client team. And this is the last, like, yay, we finished the project. Woohoo. So it was a very lighthearted meeting. Everyone's great, in a good mood. And just as we're about to start, the senior executive at the head of the table goes, well, you know how women drive, and was trying to make some sort of joke, but everyone heard him, it's important to the story, looked, but didn't say a word. And so at that moment, we were silently colluding or supporting that, frankly, stupid statement that executive said. With the speak up, we as leaders don't let that happen. We pull in that courage piece and you make it known that I don't agree with that. That's not accepted here, and create that space for that other who's being disparaged, in this case, of course, women. So that's kind of the speak up. And then act out is empowering the rest of the organization, leaders included, to really go out and be, you know, I like to say, Jane Goodall anthropologists within the workplace, and look for those policies, those anything that's out there in the business, both virtually and physically, that maybe aren't as inclusive. What a great example I heard from a client partner not too long ago was she said that, you know, kind of in the same act out idea, they went through and looked at their bereavement policy and realized that, you know, the bereavement policy was for family members. They broadened it to include non-human family members. And I just thought that was a beautiful statement. And it's, you know, did that affect a huge amount of people? Probably not. Are people going to take advantage of it? You know, in this day and age, probably not. But for those people like me, and I told her this, that don't have human kids in this life, but my canine kids are my children, and I have felt that bereavement, you know, I felt seen when she told me that. And I thought, like, what a beautiful thing. That wasn't a big, heavy lift. It probably, you know, took something, someone approved it. Yep, here you go. But what a beautiful statement. And that's kind of what we mean by act out. Things big or small that send those signals and messages that different populations are seen and included. And we want to honor those differences of your life. And you are meant to be here. So think in, speak up, and act out.
In my coaching, one of the things that I really have been focusing on a lot lately is get beyond the roles, start building person-to-person relationships. Because I, for so many reasons, if I were reporting to you, Steve, I would do a lot more, feel a lot more committed to Steve Iacovelli than my boss.
Yeah, you have that connection, you have that space. And you're, like you said, it's one-to-one, you're a human. You're not just this like lump of folks who are over in that office or in this department or in that virtual space, in that cubicle, Zoom, whatever that looks like.
It also allows me to build that trust in you that says, I'm gay, that says, I know you didn't hire me for this, but I'm one heck of a photographer if you ever need one, et cetera. What else can the individual leader do to create that inclusive environment?
Yeah, one of my, and I do talk about this in Pride Leadership under the communications area, but one of, I think, the most underutilized and undervalued strategies or tools that any leader can use is listening. And it's not the listen like, you know, Stephen Covey says, you know, listen to respond versus listen to understand kind of thing. But really listening to your team, listening to your leadership, listening to what's being said by your customer, and just really taking that in and thinking, what does it really mean to you as a leader and to the inclusive space or not so inclusive space that you are working with? And I really think that the concept of effective leadership, active listening, is really, really, really a superpower that smart organizations are using to be more inclusive. It's kind of coupled with the concept of feedback, where, you know, a smart workplace sees the concept of feedback as a gift versus a, oh, something I have to give my people once a, you know, quarter or whatever that, or once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah, exactly. That performance, you know, rating that I have to give. Smart organizations foster that environment of feedback where it's so feedback rich that people feel comfortable saying, hey, Brian, when you said that comment yesterday in our meeting, it wasn't as inclusive as it could be, or I felt alienated or whatever that is. And I just really wanted to share that with you. And then, you know, Brian, as my boss, would be like, oh my gosh, thank you for sharing that with me. And so now we're having a dialogue on what's happening versus the, hey, you said something nasty the other day, or hey, nice job in that meeting. You, what do I do with that? Nice job. How do I use that to my advantage to perform better the next time going around or keep up that same behavior? So a combination of effective listening with a feedback-rich culture, I think is the secret sauce for an organization to be more inclusive.
Or that feedback's not given at all.
Exactly.
Again, if there isn't that trust, if there isn't that relationship there, Brian's never going to hear the feedback. It will affect the performance of the team. Probably everybody else on the team will have heard it. Brian won't. Any other key messages as we move into what has been become really a disrupted business environment in so many different ways, including the impact on DEI initiatives?
Yeah. And I'll go back to the six competencies because you said the magic word a few moments ago, Brian. All of these build trust with those around you, with those throughout the organization. You know, being authentic, having courage, leveraging empathy, effective communication, building relationships especially, and shaping that culture are all fostering and building trust within the workplace. And that really, if you're listening and you've been sleeping through this whole conversation and want to wake up for the big thing, if you build trust with folks around you, you're golden as a leader. Like that's the thing you're trying to get at. That's the end game, to kind of quote Marvel and all that good stuff. And so smart businesses, especially in this day and age, are thinking through what are we doing to build trust? You know, being inclusive, oh my gosh, of course that's building trust with each of your employees. Because when you don't do that, and I don't feel that sense of belonging in the workplace, I'm going to pick up my toys and go elsewhere. And in this day and age where we've let the virtual genie out of the bottle, and yes, companies are trying to shove it back in there, people are going to go elsewhere, especially in certain jobs, of course, not every, but people can now look elsewhere, and they're not limited to what companies are in my zip code or area code or wherever that looks like. And so if you're not being as inclusive as you could be, and you're not engaging and having empathy with those around you and building those relationships, you're not building trust. And it's way too easy for a rockstar employee to just take their toys and go elsewhere. So be mindful of that, and gets back to the business case of DE&I. If I'm looking at ways to create that sense of belonging in my workplace, people are going to stick around. We're going to retain that knowledge. We're going to be more innovative. We're not going to lose the recruitment cost that it's going to take to replace that person that leaves. And so it's just making your business smarter and better. But it all starts with, what am I doing as a business to build that trust with each individual within my workforce?
Steve Iacovelli, Top Dog Learning, the Gay Leadership Dude. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Brian. It was great.